David Heldreth, it is so great to have you on the show. Welcome to Hemp Barons.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a little bit since we've spoke, so it's good to catch up.
Wonderful to catch up. And as I was saying to the producer here, Dan Homestin of MJ Bulls, when we look at the Zeese Farms website and it says, feeding the country with hemp, try the first federally legal hemp foods. I told him, you know, when your average entrepreneur just coming into this space says something like that, those of us who are very sophisticated with law and regulation say, oh boy, what's this misguided person saying? But when David Heldreth makes a statement like that, you can be guaranteed that it is backed up with an intense level of a sophisticated understanding and strong, strong command of the legal and regulatory considerations involved in a statement like that. So let's get right back into it here. Zeese Farms, tell me what it is that you're doing right now at Zeese Farms and what makes it so revolutionary, what you've been able to accomplish in terms of the particular type of food product you're making.
So basically we're focusing on utilizing the hemp leaf as a food item because it's something that's often, I feel, ignored in the cannabis industry. That the seed obviously has the value for oil, for protein extract, typically fiber people are aware of, and then obviously the cannabinoids, the flower. And the leaf seems to be kind of ignored. What's interesting is it's actually very high in protein. It's something that once you realize that it also has all of the essentials similar to the seed, which isn't surprising considering it's the same plant. And so you start to see that there's this whole use of it, and you could go from microgreens to adult. And then we've been working with the FDA on getting approved since, I've actually been working with them since prior to the farm bill being passed. And initially, they wouldn't even speak to me about the concept of it because it was cannabis, and cannabis was a controlled substance still at the time when I started the process. So I know you know how that goes. So it's just been a lot of work. Originally, to talk about the idea, I had to just speak about it in general as if it was a new plant species that was going to be used for leafy greens, just to see what technical information they would require.
So let's unpack that, David. Prior, of course, to the enactment of the 2018 Farm Bill, we had the 2014 Farm Bill, and it had created this definition for industrial hemp for the first time in U.S. history to distinguish it from other forms of cannabis. And it was defined very broadly, very clearly. It said, industrial hemp is the plant cannabis sativa L and any part of such plant, whether growing or not, that does not contain greater than 0.3% delta 9 tetrahydrocannabinol on a dry weight basis. Now, one would think that the term any part was very clear. We could take a plant that you grew, a hemp plant, give it to a 4-year-old under the 2014 Farm Bill and say, here, 4-year-old, what part of you can play with any part of this plant? What part of this plant can't you play with? And the 4-year-old would say, what do you mean? I can play with a whole part of the plant, any part of the plant. That's what you just said. And we'd say, you are right, 4-year-old. You can play with any part of that plant as long as it's grown in compliance with an ag pilot program, right? But if we took that same plant that you grew, David, and gave it to a DEA agent who, of course, was informing the FDA and said, you can play with any part of that plant, DEA agent, what part of that plant can't you play with? They would say, well, the flowering tops and the leaves and the resin, of course. And we sat there scratching our heads going, what on earth does any part of that plant somehow translate to you as except the flowering tops and the leaves and the resin? Now, of course, that was a conflated idea that the DEA had. But in the 2018 Farm Bill, of course, that definition of hemp dropping the industrial was well expanded to ensure that we really do mean any part of the plant, including the seeds thereof, its extract, cannabinoids, derivatives, isomers, salts of isomers, etc. So having said that, as you know, with every single ingredient that is put into the mouths of an animal or a human in the United States, it must be either generally recognized as safe or have other qualifications to it. Now, currently, from my understanding, and I'm so excited for you to enlighten us further, with regard to the hemp plant, the items that have been deemed generally recognized as safe, or GRAS, G-R-A-S, and I'm saying this for the listeners, David is well familiar with all of this stuff, are the hulled hemp seeds, the protein powder, and the hemp seed oil. And what I think I'm learning here from you is that the leaf has also been deemed grass, or am I missing something? Because I know that it would set the world on fire if that announcement came out, but perhaps it's more of a quiet announcement. What's the status there, mister?
So we're still working on the grass finding with them, but what's basically happening is that we're getting an allowance for the use as a food item, a conventional food item, which is actually separate from a food additive use, or and also won't require a grass finding. We can't be used, for example, you can't make a juice because that would be extraction, and so, or you know, and you need a grass finding. There are limits to what we can do. We are only allowed the fresh item.
Wow, amazing though. This is amazing though that you have continued down this far. So for example, and let me just ask this way as I expand my own knowledge base based on the work that you've done here with hemp. So a food product could be, of course, the grain itself, a hemp seed without the hull taken out. So I guess that is just a fresh food. I go into the field and I've done it many times, and there are these gorgeous nutrient-dense seeds, and I pick it off the plant and I put it in my mouth. I enjoy the taste, and I know how many wonderful nutrients that seed is delivering to my body. Whereas versus the hulled seeds, which have been processed minimally, but still the hulls have been taken out, right? And then cleared off. So we certainly don't like to see hulls in our bag of beautiful, nutty, flavored, creamy hemp hearts. And then for the protein powder, clearly quite a bit of processing went into that because we've now pressed oil, we've taken the seed cake, we've milled it, we've sifted it, etc. And the same thing with the oil. We've processed it. We have pressed the seed itself for the oil. Whereas that seed that I picked off the plant on the farm with the help shell still on it, that hasn't been processed at all. Am I on track here with what you're trying to demonstrate to us?
Yeah, essentially. And so basically, it's something that I'm trying to get the FDA to announce publicly more widely, because it's something that's being, because in internal communication, we've gotten this answer from them, but it's not something that they've announced very publicly. So we have documentation of this, but it's something that I believe is going to be announced as the part of when they announce the final hemp plan from the FDA, they were announced was being reviewed by the White House in, was that August?
It's
when
been
they announced? Because of that, there's this whole stall on announcements. And then with the transition between the current administration and the next administration, I believe that that's then further stalled that. And so there's a lot coming on this front. And it's a strange holding pattern right now because of the administration changes.
Indeed. You know, I am the Vice President of Law and Science for the U.S. Hemp Roundtable, so we are obviously knee-deep in all of these things and having these conversations as well. Of course, H.R. 8179 has been put into play, which was written with the Dietary Supplement Coalition, the U.S. Hemp Roundtable and Dietary Supplement Coalitions, and very grateful for Representatives Morgan Griffith and Kurt Schrader for their leadership on those. Of course, as you know, that will need to be refiled, get a new bill number, but we're already up to 30 co-sponsors. All of that dovetailing with what the OMB has right now, the Office of Management and Budget, which of course is the White House, with regard to those draft regulations, but just so very much in play. Having said that, once again, I know David Heldreth's professional integrity. So when he is saying, try the first federally legal hemp leaf food, there's documentation somewhere. And yes, on the internal communications, I'm so thrilled for you, brother, that you are achieving this, that you are pushing this forward and leading the way. As we well know, hemp can feed the world. We're talking about our farmers here. We're talking about trying to provide and in fact, delivering on the promise of providing economic stability for our farmers while also making the world and humans and animals a healthier place and healthier living beings. Now, let's talk for a minute about the difference between going through this approval for humans versus going through this approval for animals.
That's amazing. We're actually in that process as well. I'm sure you've heard about the University of Kansas project on this currently for animal feed, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I believe the Hemp Feed Coalition is involved with that as well.
And so we've been providing samples of the varieties that we're developing for humans to consume because we're searching for developing higher protein, no cannabinoid, because while some people obviously want cannabinoids, there's a definite segment of the market that wants nothing to do with them. But we can still provide them hemp that's high in protein and other nutrients without having the cannabinoids. So we're developing these varieties and then we're actually providing hemp to that trial as well. And so it's amazing to start seeing some of that data. I mean, COVID has definitely sidetracked a lot of things this year for everybody, but we've still been making progress on all these fronts, which is amazing considering everything that's happening. Seeing how delicate the world's balance can be, it's great to see that this industry has still been able, I mean, I guess it's just that we've had to fight against things for so long that this doesn't seem so different than normal for the cannabis industry.
Yes, that is so true. And in so many ways, we're used to it. And it's just, you know, I'm going to get hippie on you here and quote Joni Mitchell in the song Woodstock, you know, maybe it's just the time of year or maybe it's the time of man. It is the time of humanity. Having said that, a lot of folks do think that it's a cannabis, these very hurdles that we need to jump through to prove safety. And the reality is that unless these things have already been in the food supply and eating grass, et cetera, whether in the food supply, meaning if we're talking about a new dietary ingredient, et cetera, you could be a dandelion if you were a new dietary ingredient or otherwise not already generally recognized, you're going to go through all of the same steps, whether there's a cannabinoid in you or not. I think a lot of folks find it interesting to know AFCO, of course, which is a division of FDA responsible for animal feed, to even get one ingredient, and by that I mean, and this is the great work that the Hemp Feed Coalition is doing, even just to get hulled hemp seeds, that's one ingredient. Protein powder, hemp protein, that's another. Hemp seed oil, that's another. Your hemp leaf, that's another. We need to do applications per ingredient, per species. So an ingredient and one for pig, an ingredient and one for horse, an ingredient and one for bovine, right? The only animals that AFCO allows you to combine per ingredient are cats and dogs, presumably because we don't eat them in this country. That's, and a concern being bioaccumulation, I suppose, and other things that happen to animals that we actually eat, and then how that affects the human body. So are you working with AFCO at all, or you're working with AFCO through the University of Kansas?
We're working with the University of Kansas and then AFCO. There's still a lot of data that we have to collect. I reached out to them several years ago on this front and was trying to supply a lot of, because there's a lot of this data, a lot of the data already exists on some of these topics, but it's piecemeal studies across. And so I was trying to create a portfolio of evidence, but there just wasn't enough for them. And so then it's like, where are the holes? What do we need to bridge? And then there, but now like the University of Kansas has been doing some of the research. It has grants from the USDA. And that's the kind of things that we need from the federal government to provide grants like that, so that way we can start solving these problems. And like you said, there's all of these different ingredients and each one needs an approval at every species. And I think it's interesting is that while hemp seed and all these things are allowed for humans, they're not generally allowed for many animal species yet. A lot of this still has to be done, which is so interesting to me. And then also it's just the market for that is so big, but you're right about the bioaccumulation, because as they accumulate it and then it further accumulates in us over time, it's like almost a double exposure. So it kind of makes sense that they would be protective over those populations. It's going to be interesting. In addition to the AFCO route, there's actually similar to the grass route, but for animal feed for the FDA, or it's a, I can't remember if it's that or it's the food additive petition as well. So you don't, everything has to go through the AFCO, but it's typically easier. So that's usually the way the easier way to go. I think if it's through AFCO, then it's one that anyone can use as well.
It's a very, very complicated process, and that's part of why it's so, yeah, you know, as you're like, Joy, cry, tell me all about it, sister. It is definitely a very complicated process. There isn't a single hemp ingredient yet that has been approved, not a single one just yet, but we are so close to getting there. Each application, you know, is quite costly, but we, and certainly the reality is that for hundreds of years, I mean, we have been feeding since probably 1619, if not before, in the Jamestown colony. We're, you know, feeding, using hemp to feed people and animals. But here we are today after a sleepy slumber of prohibition of the plant and having to, you know, reprove ourselves in a way. Let's talk about Washington State for a minute, if we could. Zeis Farms is based in Washington State. Is that right?
Currently, yes. But a lot of we're partnering with farms in other states because of some of the difficulties we're having in Washington. Well,
so Washington, David, I love the state of Washington. I've raised my sons here who are now making their way through master's programs. We moved here when they were young. I moved here in 1998 when medical cannabis was legalized through an initiative of the people as opposed to legislation. And then, of course, in 2012, a glorious year, we legalized adult use cannabis in the state of Washington, again, through an initiative of the people. And it took another 4 years to legalize the cultivation of hemp under an agricultural pilot program. So in March of 2016, finally, through an act of legislation, we legalized the planting and harvesting of hemp. Having said that, we've got two different sets of concerns, and we could probably go all day on subsets, but keeping it sort of simple for the listeners here, one is the state of Washington basically discusses cannabidiol, or a hemp extract, so to speak, that it may not be marketed as a dietary supplement or a food here in the state of Washington. That in fact, when we talk about extracts or cannabidiol, that they can only be marketed, these products, as a cosmetic here in Washington. That's one issue that sort of continues to become a sticking point. And the other, the high level issue, would be the fact that the U.S. Department of Agriculture post-2018 Farm Bill has put forth regulations for state plants, and states can be more restrictive than the regulations prescribed by the USDA, but they cannot be less restrictive. And this has really caused quite a problem around the, and we know that the DA, and we know this because Secretary Sonny Perdue testified before Congress, and we've got him on videotape saying it, God bless him, that the DA really interfered with this process and was no fan of the entire program to begin with. But due to the DEA's interference, we have some nearly untenable harvesting and testing requirements that not only affect the hemp extract industry, but clearly affect an industry involved in microgreens and hemp leaf sales. Can you elaborate for us?
Oh, definitely. It's intriguing. So there's a few ways in terms of production, but the simplest way is that almost the USDA rules, which right now are delayed because of the recent spending bill for a year, which is helpful. But most states have switched to it. But basically what the rules are requiring is that they essentially require you to have a flower to test for THC concentration to ensure that you're below the 0.3% THC is required by law. Well, that's fine. But what if you're not cultivating a plant that's ever going to get to a flower? And then you're kind of then unable to get a harvest certification, which Washington State requires for you to be able to harvest your crop, which is required, again, under the USDA plan as well. I mean, there's theoretically times when you might harvest fiber and you may not need to have a flower. It's just an oversight in the plan. So it makes it essentially illegal to harvest microgreens. Washington State did a pilot with us this year where we did it. They allowed us to last year because it was under the 2014 bill and then it switched. And so we couldn't this year, But they did a pilot for testing together data to basically demonstrate that there's no possible way to exceed 0.3 at that point, which makes it kind of funny. But then also, thankfully, I bugged the USDA enough about this and was able to speak with the head of the program, the hemp program there. And if you look at when the USDA reopened their comment this year, there's specifically a section for hemp microgreens, clones, and seedlings. That's because I told them, I said, well, how under these rules, how are you able to harvest a clone? Because that harvesting is happening before it's flowered. So that, or moving a seedling off of location, all of these things fall outside of the scope of this harvest protocol. That, and so are they all illegal? I mean, that seems ridiculous.
And not the intent, and not the intent of either Congress or even the USDA, and not even their intent. They got sideblinded in so many ways by the DEA, but continue, because this is the stuff that lights me up, and what tremendous work you've done. Continue.
And so basically I had to essentially almost be like, I don't want to like have to sue or something, but it just doesn't seem right. And like, how do we resolve this? Like, and basically the USDA is just telling people to ignore the rule when it's things like this. That's literally their answer right now, is trying to get states to just ignore these types of problems because they don't have an answer. And so, but the thing is the states won't. And so right now, you have the situation where even though they've delayed the program for a year of the USDA rule implementation, Washington State still won't allow us. They're working and changing, which I get it, technically the rules. And so they're working to amend everything so we can, but that's not a quick process in regulatory rulemaking. And so, and the same thing, USDA is doing the same thing right now from taking that comment. And so eventually, again, but because of new hold of vision knows when plan will be. So all the changing current time, technically it's like this weird gray area where the states that are 2014 bill we could end, but the other hand, so range. And so I'll let you run for it.
Yes, no. It is really, again, asteroids hitting meteor. This is a plasma of an emerging industry. And by the way, these types of weird oddities and inconsistencies and incongruities, they're not unusual for any emerging industry, but indeed an industry that's coming off the heels of hysterical prohibition for several decades has some unique challenges. But even just a regular emerging industry, this kind of thing gets crazy with enforcement, etc. And that is what is so frustrating, is that the states, including the state of Washington, has chosen to listen. Even the FDA, because they've not actually ever done a final agency action or a final determination, this has not been tested in the courts, their guidance with regard to CBD, and I CBD does tend to take up all the air in the room, and so it's even making its way into our conversation about leaves, for goodness sake, and you're not even in that industry. But as an example, it's a guidance position. It's actually not the law. And the FDA can say, shout from the rooftops, that their guidance position is that it is a violation of federal law to market CBD as a dietary supplement or a food. The reality is that they know that it is no final agency action, no formal discretion. And that is why the industry has been allowed to just exponentially grow under that guidance position. If tomorrow the formal guidance position, the formal final agency action comes down, then that would obviously change the world and on its axis it would turn. But we know that it isn't going to, because that's another regulator, Stephen Hahn, who we have on tape testifying before Congress that it would be a fool's errand. They're not going to, quote, not going to tell people not to take these products. And so now here you have with the USDA, and they're being good, they're being kind, they're being helpful to the farmer, to the small business person, which is their job. And they're saying, you know what, we get it. There's something that's incongruent here, but you should be able to move forward. So just move forward. And you've got the state saying, oh, well, the letter of the law says, or the letter of the guidance position states, or the letter of the sampling protocol says, and not being able or willing to move with that sort of conflict between what I won't say is state and federal regulation, rather state and federal enforcement discretion. So very, very interesting stuff. Will you talk to us about the microgreens? Because certainly, and some other ways that humans eat leaves. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, definitely. So on the nutrition side, there's actually more potassium in raw hemp leaf than there is in the same amount of banana. So while people eat banana for nutrition, that's just to give you an example. And there's actually in the same amount of, say, 100 grams of milk and 100 grams of hemp leaf, there's more calcium and protein in the hemp leaf than there is in the milk. And so it's just it's basically a superfood.
It's a superfood that needs a super cape.
It's just insane. The more you know, and like eventually I'd like to get into, because unfortunately everyone likes extracting everything and getting to protein isolate because there's so many uses for that in plant proteins and things, but that requires a whole other approvals. But in the short run, the leaf by itself can be, what's interesting to me is we're giving it to chefs and seeing what they create with it, because they've gone beyond anything I could ever imagine. They're making kimchi with it. They're making, they're putting it in sandwiches. They're dehydrating it. They're putting it in batter and deep frying it. They're putting it on sandwiches and burgers with eggs. For wraps with shrimp ceviche. There's obviously you could use it in stews. That's what's interesting is like any way you'd use a herb or a salad green or you can use. And it's versatile between the use of, because it's not just a microgreen. It's also can be, there's like, I mean, basically we're going between micros, babies, and then mature. And so you have this, you start getting slightly different consistencies. And so when you're doing things like deep frying, you'll want to utilize a bigger, firmer leaf so that it'll actually hold up in the batter, for example. Yeah. And there's a great chef, Mike Magliano. He works with like Pantry, which is a recreational cannabis company, but he also is developing plant-based foods and things. And so he's been using them and he worked with, I apologize to all the great restaurants he's worked with because I should remember their names. And they're starting to put things like that on their menus. But again, the COVID is kind of, that was originally what a lot of our launch was going to be around, was restaurants, because early adoption happens with chefs and they drive that. The home market and retail is just a lot harder to scale and get people to buy into. It's when you have that experience with food in a restaurant, I feel like it exposes you to new ingredients in ways that you can't do because of the same problem is how do you explain to people how to use it? We're accumulating recipes and things now to start a cookbook specifically for hemp leaf because of this. But again, honestly, just on our Instagram, not our actual company images. I mean, some of them, but if you look at who's tagged us, there's some amazing things in there. Chef Holden Yeager is another one. He actually did a show with Gordon Ramsay, where Gordon Ramsay went to San Francisco and a few other chefs from Europe, and you can see it on YouTube. And they actually, they infuse some food, but they also use the leaf on a few of the dishes, like the tea, because they did a high tea and used it for the tea sandwiches and things. And it's just interesting to see, because I think he actually salted, dried, and cured and candied the leaves. And so that's, I mean, like, it's, yeah. And we're also, I'm currently pickling some for experimentation in my fridge myself.
I am just so lit up, brother. I this is just so fantastic. And of course, the other thing about the early adopters being the restaurants is that then people come in and they see it. Not only is it giving them the idea of what to do with it, but it's liberating them to do something with it. It's really just making the public setting where it is okay. Let's try something new. It's delicious. It's nutritious. And while you tell us about the calcium and the potassium quantity and comparisons. And thank you so much for that. Such great information to have. I often, and I go off, as you know, I have a grain processing facility. Hemp seed runs my life. And the incredibly nutrient dense profile of the hemp seed blows my mind. And of course, when we talk about it being the highest digestible form of protein, that seed, because of its lack of trypsin inhibitors, it's basically full profile of amino acids, maybe a little shy on the lysine there. And the fact that generally speaking, and when we speak about hemp, everything is generally speaking, the hemp seed is about 60% Edistin protein, which is a globular protein far better to be absorbed and more easily absorbed by the body than these more fibrous proteins that are in wheat or soy or beef or chicken. Can you tell us any comparisons, kind of the way you did with the potassium and the calcium in terms of the protein content? So I've got, generally speaking, 3 tablespoons of hulled hemp seeds is going to give me around 10 grams of digestible protein. Any way to sort of tell us about that with the leaf?
So the difference, it roughly equates to about a third as much when it's fresh. When it's dry, it's relatively the same. That's some of the bigger differences, is that there's a lot more water weight. So it also depends on whether you're talking about, so the, like I was saying, is because the fresh produce has a lot of water weight. And so it's a lot less dense than the seed. But for example, dry leaf powder ends up having around 20% total protein, which is roughly the same as seed. The water weight and things like that is some of the bigger problems with the fresh, but the fresh produce has other, you know, with that you'll have higher flavonoids and other compounds that you don't get with this. I don't think it's either or, it's both.
It's and both. Like,
I mean, imagine, like, things I want to see is eventually getting the essential oil approved as grass. And then you can have something where you have the leaf salad with hemp grain in it, with, you know, maybe a hemp mozzarella in there, and then like a hemp oil dressing with an essential oil in it. I mean, that's the future I want to see.
And that's the future that's coming. And of course, hemp is also the great blender, right? I know in the 90s, we had these visions of this 100% hemp world, and every farm was going to be all hemp all day, all the time, and all the paper was going to be hemp, and everything's going to be hemp. And of course, that's a monoculture, and it's boring. Particularly, diversity is what gives the earth plane its character and keeps us evolving. But also, I think that the bottom line is hemp is a tremendous blender and synthesizer for industrial purposes, for nutritional purposes, for animal and human purposes. It is a great synthesizer. It is so tremendous what Zeus Farm is doing, the inroads that you're making, just the permaculture flower, I guess I would say, that you are affecting with your vision. And with your intellect, and absolutely with, you know, the force and dedication by which you advocate for this plant in all of its forms. David, it's just such a pleasure to have you on the show and sharing this incredible work with us. I want to ask you, in the time that we have left, first of all, is there something that I didn't ask you, or that you a message you may want to make sure the listeners know or understand about hemp in general, or about what you do?
I could touch on my other company really quickly,
please,
which is a completely different direction. I actually just got notice that my first patent has been issued, so it'll actually be issued technically on December 29th, because they issue on Tuesdays. And so I'm excited for that. And it's for agricultural treatments on cannabis. And we're working with some large ag companies, which I can't name due to NDAs, and the EPA to do the testing required to bring those to market. These are all things that are used on other crops. It's just figuring out the ratios of different things. And we've been able to induce a higher cannabinoid and terpene yields, or alter the cannabinoid and terpene consistency, you know, makeup of the ratios in the flower, utilizing different treatments. And so I got those that patent awarded, and there's a few more in the series that'll be coming. And so the goal is just to try and it's the same thing you do with grapes or any other crop, is to try and improve it through the cultivation methods. And so we're excited to see that start getting finished, and then to hopefully it'll probably be more like 2021, but have something that farmers will be able to actually purchase and utilize in their fields to increase the quality of their crop. So it's something I'm excited about.
I'm so excited for you. And talk about a grand finale, in case you didn't understand how fantastic David is with the basic and simple, however complex and nutritious, hemp leaf. He also, in his spare time, invent stuff, and then has patents issued. You are incredible, brother. It's just such a pleasure and thrill, really, to watch the lotus petals unfold of heroes and heroines like you, David. And I can't wait to have you back on. And as the legislative session for the state gets ready here and comes online, I sure hope that we'll be spending more time talking with each other about the regs here in Washington State, since I moved back here in March after doing some great work in New York for 2.5 years, actually more involved in what's going on in New York than ever before. We're in a prop regs phase there too, but I really am looking forward to working with you on a deeper level, and we'll do everything that I can to spread the good word about Zeese Farms and about the tremendous work you're doing to feed the world and to feed the animals. David, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and it'll be great to work together on the Washington laws. And I have to assume you were involved in helping getting New York to allow hemp into their medical system, so that medical cannabis system. So that's something I'm excited about for New York, since you mentioned New York.
Yay. No, very great things happening there. Very favorable climate there. And we just have to say, Washington saying, oh no, whatever the FDA is saying, we have to do. And then you've got the great state of New York, which really prides itself on being the gold standard. And they, in the face of what the FDA is saying, we're doing it here. So something tells me, and I know for a fact, actually, your product will fly there. And if you ever need assistance there, I'll do everything that I can to work those relationships. David, have such healthy, happy, and hempy holidays, and we'll have you again on Hemp Baron soon.
Thank you so much. Have a great holidays.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, my name's Kate, and I'm your host of the Pot Moms Podcast. I started the Pot Moms Podcast, because I wanted to end the stigma against using cannabis, specifically with moms, but also anyone who chooses to consume. I strive for a balance of humor and education, along with some pretty rad guests, to help combat social biases that come with consuming cannabis. Kids are hard. Join me for regular podcast episodes packed with parenting hacks, real life stories, and of course, my favorite cannabis products. The days are long, but the years are short. So roll another J and take a deep breath. Keep blazing and stay amazing.